Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch, inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show every day right here on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. Because as everyone knows, Scott is a legend in his own mind.
Welcome back. Third hour of the Scott Hamilton Show. Panic Monday. NASCAR Cup Series wrapped up the 2021 season over the weekend. Phoenix Raceway. It was a winner-take-all or highest finisher-take-all kind of race. The playoffs keep getting whittled down each section. They would cut a couple down, and then finally you had that four-man field going into yesterday's race. Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Larson. All Hendrick, all Gibbs. That's the way it was. They should have just had their own track and said, okay, go ahead, guys. You know, whoever finishes first wins the whole darn thing. But it capped off one of the more epic individual seasons in NASCAR history. I think that is undeniable. What happened this year for Kyle Larson has to be one of the most historic seasons in the storied history of NASCAR at the Cup Series. Has to be.
I would think so, right? How many wins he had. Unbelievable.
And then you juxtapose it against everything that happened leading up to this. Well, here's the final call from yesterday.
Huge amount of time.
He's closed the gap. The 5. Now sees the 19. He's getting closer in the mirror. Down the backstretch for the final time.
There's going to be a lap car on the inside. Not going to allow Truex to run that low line that he wants to run.
Kyle Larson, a year ago, watched the race from North Carolina. Today, he's a Cup Series champion.
Oh, my God, guys.
I think he was excited, and he should be.
Say the least, yeah.
I mean, it seemed like he was winning every single week. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think he won 5 times during the playoffs alone.
I believe so. That's incredible. That's incredible, Scott.
That's a good season if you get 5 wins.
Oh, yeah.
If you get 5 in the playoffs, oh, my God. And he 10 wins for the year? Was it 10 for the year?
I believe 10 or 9. I thought it was 9.
Either way, I mean.
It's still incredible.
Incredible. And here's where it gets really incredible. By the way, that's his first title, the 14th for Hendrick Motorsports. It comes one season after he was suspended from NASCAR and fired. This guy didn't have a job. Chip Ganassi Racing sent him packing, and rightfully so, when he used that racial slur during a live-streamed simulated race, online race. It was video gaming, basically, right. Is what they were doing. He drops a horrible word.
Yep.
The context of which is immaterial. And Ganassi Racing says, no, you got to go. You're out of here. So he sits out, doesn't have a job, gets picked up by Hendrick, and goes on to have one of the greatest individual seasons in the history of the sport. And this sport's been around a while, like 70 years, 75 years, something like that. It's incredible, just dominant. And I'm wondering what he did over the past 12 months to get his head straight in order to do something like this. By the way, 2017 champ Martin Truex Jr., he was leading before the yellow flag flew. He was the one pressing Kyle Larson all the way to the finish line, but he couldn't get past him. And then Denny Hamlin, of course, finished third ahead of Ryan Blaney and Larson's teammate Chase Elliott, who was wanting to repeat. But back to Larson, for him to turn his life around and pull himself up, it's incredible.
Shows the kind of character that he has. Yeah.
Well, Trent, you need rock-solid character. You have to be surrounded by the right people. You have to be getting the right kind of advice. And then you have to find yourself in just the perfect situation in order to make sure all the distractions don't keep you off track, for lack of a better word. Now, I wasn't being corny there. But for him to land at Hendrick, my goodness gracious.
Best spot you could be at,
that's
right?
That's like being cut by, the Cubs and ending up with the Braves. You see what I'm saying? That's a poor analogy, but you get my point.
No, I get it, yeah.
Let's dive deeper into this. We've got a really good guest coming. Joining us now to say Tama Hotline, and Trent, those of us from a certain generation, we will remember him as the host of an outstanding show called Headbangers Ball. It was must-see television for me when I was in high school. He's now the host of Racing Rocks Radio. He also has the Cat House Hollywood podcast. Ricky Rackman, welcome to the Scott Hamilton Show.
Hello, Scott, and why does every interview that I do have to start with, you know, for those of you that remember, or back many decades ago, or, you know, if you're old enough to remember, it's like everything always has to remind me that I'm, like, old.
Well, but we have something to talk about. You did something. I got to tell you, man, I mean, that was must-see television for me during my high school years, and our buddies would sit around and watch it, and it was awesome, man. Be grateful, Ricky. Be grateful, man. You're blessed.
Oh, my gosh. Let me tell you something. I am very grateful. I mean, whenever I go, whether I'm at a race or a concert, you know, I'm constantly meeting people that are telling me, oh, you know, thanks, Ricky. If it wasn't for Headbangers Ball, I wouldn't have discovered Pantera, or I wouldn't have discovered, you know, Zombie or anything. I mean, there's a lot of people that could, you know, I grew up in Hollywood. I lived in Hollywood, so music was always around me. But I couldn't, you know, for the people that can't get out to concerts or shows or don't know people in bands, Headbangers Ball was the way that they discovered much of the music, and it was a big part of everybody's youth. So, you know, I grew up watching Mr. Rogers and Captain Kangaroo, and a lot of people grew up sneaking in their rooms on Saturday nights watching me and Headbangers Ball. So it's very flattering.
You know, I want to talk to you about racing, but let's explore this just a little further. You talk about being able to go out to concerts, to go out to shows, to meet people in the bands and so on and so forth. How valuable would a Headbangers Ball have been last year in 2020 when everybody was locked up? We really could have used that entertainment.
We really could. We always can. I mean, we live in a different generation right now that if you say, you know what, I'd like to see something from Metallica, you tell your phone to do it and you're watching it. Or, you know, with Spotify or other different platforms, you can constantly get it. So it's rare for people to sit down and watch music videos, and especially when you want to turn somebody onto something new, if it's something you're not familiar with, you skip and delete. You skip and delete. You know, it's just it's that quick. But still, you know, it would have been important because there were, for many, you know, for geez, a year and a half, there's been bands that couldn't go out and tour, couldn't show people their new music. And you know, I've always thought that there always needs to be a platform for people to find whatever genre of music it is. But now people just go out and search it themselves, I guess, and it's almost too accessible.
Ricky, you're a fascinating guy. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. You're a fascinating guy. I would see you putter around the gym getting trained and all that, and I'm like, man, what's this guy doing here? You, like you said, you grew up in Hollywood. And when I think of Hollywood, I don't think of NASCAR. I don't think of stock cars. How did you make your transition into the world of racing, to talking about racing, to following NASCAR?
I was never a fan of any other sports except racing. I've always loved racing. I don't have a family background in racing. I don't know what it was, but I've always loved cars. And growing up in L.A., you know, in the early 90s, or even the late 80s, it was not common to find somebody to talk racing with. You know, I remember going to races at Saugus, and I got to do a racing school when I was younger at Riverside International Raceway. But as I got older, people really weren't into racing, so it became like almost like an underground sport. It's like, you know, when people like to talk about the underground bands and be rebellious and do something different, you know, I was talking about how cool Dale Earnhardt was, and it was like, what in the world are you talking about, you know? But it's just something that's always attracted me to me. To me, I think there is nothing more rock and roll than racing. I mean, it's loud, it's fast, it's dangerous. I happen to just love it. It's not two teams, it's sometimes 40 teams. And it's just always been attractive to me. And one day I remember walking through the pits, probably at California Speedway, or might have even been Daytona, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to find a way to work in racing. And I just did everything I could to work in racing, to the point of coming up with a radio show that plays music and talks about racing. And then I was working with Speed Channel and NASCAR.com and working for a couple racetracks, and It's something that's always been attracted to me. I love the sport. I don't know anything about technical aspects. When people talk about the next-gen car, only I can think of is, oh, those wheels are cool. but I know about racing because I know about the personalities, and I love the history of the sport. To me, it is a rock and roll sport if ever there was one.
We're joined by Ricky Rackman. You can follow him on Twitter at Ricky Rackman. And Ricky, I've got lots of questions about Cliff Burton and Jason Newsted and all those guys, but let's talk about Kyle Larson first. Kyle Larson, man, a season for the ages. Where does it rank historically in your estimation? You say you're a guy that loves the history of the sport. Where do you rank his 2021 all-time?
When you've got people like Mario Andretti and Tony Stewart calling Kyle Larson the greatest race car driver of all time, that really stands out. I mean, you got to remember, Kyle Larson wasn't racing in NASCAR last year, but he got like 46 wins in other series. This is one of the greatest race car drivers of all time. And yes, he had a major hiccup by doing something really stupid that took him out of the sport. And we didn't know if he was going to come back. And I'll be honest, I didn't think he was going to come back as strong as he did. And yes, of course, a lot of it has to do with Hendrick Motorsports and Cliff Daniels, but Kyle Larson is a good person. I believe he's in, I think he cares a lot about people, and that guy can wheel a race car, and I believe he's one of those drivers that you put him in anything, and he's going to win races. I mean, it's an incredible year. I mean, do you realize Kyle Larson led more laps this season than any driver has ever led in a season? And we had road course races, which don't have as many laps. So that just goes to show how dominant Kyle Larson was this year.
Is it a perfect marriage then? Maybe because I look at that and I think, well, part of that, of course, is his unassailable talent. But it's also, I think, a disparity in resources that Hendrick and Joe Gibbs are just so much better than everybody else. How much of that is his talent? How much of it is being on the perfect race team?
I mean, that's really hard to say, especially when you've got, you know, you've got Alex Bowman, who is a great driver. And he wasn't doing much on the smaller. You know, Alex Bowman, some people think he's just new to this sport. He's been in the sport for a while, and this year he got four wins. So a lot of it, of course, has to do with the team that you're on. But, you know, that's a question that anybody that tells you for sure is just still guessing, because, of course, a lot of it has to do with Hendrick. Of course, a lot of it has to do with his pit crew. You know, they got the second fastest pit stop they've had the entire season yesterday. So of course, a lot of it has to do with Hendrick. A lot of it has to do with the resources and the money that that team has. You know, he had some okay years at Ganassi, but, you know, I'm very curious to see what happens next year. Is this going to be a level playing field now with this next gen car, or is it going to be worse because all during the off season, teams with a lot of money have been able to do a little bit more research? So it's a tough question that whether you know everything about the mechanics of these cars or you don't, it still takes a lot of guessing, because it's hard to say what would happen if you would have taken Kyle Larson and put him in a smaller team, or taken, you know, a driver in a smaller, like, you know, what would happen if you put BJ McLeod in a Hendrick car? You know, I mean, these are all interesting things that we might not ever know.
And Ricky, you came up in an industry that's, you know, pretty volatile, let's say the least, and you've had your own issues with sobriety and drug use, but you've been clean mm-hmm. for decades now. And I know it's not apples to apples, but here's Kyle Larson also dealing with a very personal issue, something he's got to come to terms with. He has to maintain his own sanity and keep himself moving forward. What do you think he did, race team aside, what do you think he did within himself to be able to keep himself together, move forward, and have the season he's had?
Obviously, a lot of soul-searching, but a lot of racing. I mean, when your whole livelihood and your career is taken away from you, you know, you have to look. I've made mistakes, you know, I got in a fist fight with a DJ back in the early 2000s and lost my career. And it makes you rethink everything. But he was able to get into another race car. He was racing sprints and outlaws and dirt and stuff like that. So I think he just raced, but he had to deal with this because, you know, I don't believe Kyle Larson is a racist, but it was a really stupid, insensitive thing to do. And, I think it made him a better person, but I don't know. But it's got to be tough when the world when the world is angry with you and some of the people that you hear supporting you are not the people that you want supporting you. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's people that stood behind Kyle Larson when he said that for all the wrong reasons. So it's got to be a weird situation when people are saying, that's right, Kyle, I'm glad you said it. And you're like, whoa, I don't really want these people supporting me.
You know, what's his legacy now, Ricky? Because it doesn't go away. It'll never go away. It'll always be part of his resume, good or bad. But he's handled things so perfectly on and off the track that I have to think that this is a smaller part of the big picture now.
I think without a doubt. I think this is something that eventually we will go away. I mean, we live in this crazy cancel culture society where we damn people, sometimes it's deserved, sometimes it's not, but also we're in a culture that sometimes we forget. I mean, the thing is, if he had a mediocre season, we'd probably hang on to this stuff, and maybe we'd think, you know, all that stuff took him off of his game. But Kyle, what Kyle Larson's doing, nobody else has done. He's still a young – I mean, we got to remember, this is a young guy. This is a guy that's more than likely going to have multiple championships. This is a guy that we probably will see in an Indy 500. You know, I think eventually we will always know there was that bad thing that happened, but I don't think this is part of his legacy. I think he is yet to write his legacy. I think this is just the starting of Kyle Larson going down and being up there with the Richard Petty, Dale Earnhardts, and Jimmy Johnsons.
We're joined by Ricky Rackman. Follow him on Twitter at Ricky Rackman. And Ricky, just a couple more questions. And you mentioned the next gen car and the way certain teams leverage that car or utilize that vehicle could help narrow the gap between Hendrick Gibbs and everybody else. Is there anything else, though, you would like to see going into next season to maybe create a little more parity?
See, I don't know that much about the next gen car except for the aesthetics and the way that things look. I don't know, because on one hand, we don't want all cars to be the same, but you can't really do, I don't know. I mean, that's something that's answered by people in a much greater pay grade and that know a lot more about mechanics than I do. I mean, I changed the oil in my motorcycle and I set it on fire this year. So that goes. I mean, we know that we want everything to be the same, but, you know, people say, well, we don't want the IROC series, which I don't know how many people remember, but I kind of like the IROC series.
Yeah, Earnhardt Sr. was great in the IROC series.
Yeah, I mean, it the IROC series, for people that don't remember, was you would take some of the greatest drivers in the world and put them in identical cars and put them on racetracks. It favored NASCAR drivers a little bit because we were racing at, you know, Richmond, we were racing at Daytona, and sometimes when you put people in identical cars, you know, some guys will just run away with it, and it became very, very boring. And I think that's what we don't want. You know, if you put everybody in identical cars, I don't think that would make things – but, you know, the problems that we have is there's a lot of drivers out there that probably could be the best drivers in the world, but they don't have the money. You know, the biggest problem is – well, I don't know if the biggest problem, but I think it's a big problem is – even it happened to Kyle Larson. When Kyle Larson was looking for a team to go to, he went to Hendrick Motorsports. This is before he went to Ganassi. He went to Hendrick, and one of the things that Jeff Gordon told him is like, you know, hey, can you bring, you know, $150,000 in sponsorship, or can you bring money with you? There's drivers out there that are probably racing short tracks that if they were given the opportunity, they would be dominant, but they don't have money. This is a sponsor-driven sport. And if I win the lotto and I decide to sponsor myself, I could be racing some truck series races. There's no doubt about it. I might not do well, but I could be out there. And, you know, there's teams in some of these series that don't have money. I mean, you know, a Jennifer Jo Cobb, who races in the truck series, that never does well, and she's also using the tires that the other teams don't use anymore. You know, it's a thing that money does make you go faster. I wish there was a way that it was more talent, that there'd be more opportunity for drivers to come up through lower ranks. But, you know, unless you've got money, you're not going to race in some of the three bigger series, no matter how good you are. And that's a shame.
You know, I like this idea, Ricky. If one of us wins the lottery, we create something that's nothing but a developmental team. And we bring drivers up from the lower ranks that are running at Bowman Gray or wherever, and we give them an opportunity 1 year to compete at the cup level. If they do well, they move on to another team. We go down and get the next rising star. But we keep most of the winnings.
No, I like this idea. I win the lotto, I'm racing.
I love that idea.
Here's the way it goes. I win the lotto, I'm racing. I also, you know, for people don't know, is last year, actually for the past 2 years, I've been working with the American Flat Track Series, which is motorcycle racing, which you talk about grassroots. I mean, this is a racing series that these guys go out there, risk their lives, and sometimes they're driving in a van with their motorcycle. I mean, I loved working with that series because I think the flat track racing is so incredibly exciting. And that is really a team where, you know, maybe the top two guys are making in the six figures, but, you know, the other guys aren't. It's a real, you know, sport where these people are loading their bikes out of the van, and maybe if they win a race, they'll get $1,500. You know, I really loved working in that series. I love all forms of racing, you know. I really, really do.
I met a guy, and I hate that I can't remember his name. I met him about 2 months ago, and he drives speedboats. And his name was Scott something. I remember because it was my name. He was telling me how fast he goes in these boats, and I'm like, that's really awesome, but I would never do that.
There was a time, this was probably in the 80s, that for one event, my company, Cat House, sponsored a blown alcohol hydro speedboat, and at that time they told me that was the most dangerous sport in the world, and I was like, really? And that was powerboat racing. I mean, I think next year I'm going to try to get into Formula One. I just have a hard time with it. But as far as, you know, NASCAR and motorcycle racing, and, you know, this year I got to go to some outlaw races. I just love watching people race, and I love going to short track races as well.
Have you been up to Bowman Gray?
I did. I do every year. I go on a motorcycle ride, and I raise a bunch of money, and I just go ride all over America. You know, I've been coast to coast 13 times. And 1 year I said, you know what, I'm going to go to Bowman Gray. And I rode to Bowman Gray. I bought my ticket. I sat in the stands by myself and had a riot. I mean, it is incredible because it's so great for people watching. I mean, Bowman Gray is the thing that you need to experience, and it's sometimes about the racing. But what makes Bowman Gray so exciting is the people, the history. I'm really excited about the L.A. Coliseum in February because that's going to be, you know, a quarter mile flat, sort of like Bowman Gray in the Los Angeles Coliseum. Of course, we're not going to get the type of people they get at Bowman Gray, and that what makes it so great. You know, I've had the chance to go to Bowman Gray and go to Eldora and go to Williams Grove and Springfield and go to a lot of the iconic tracks. And there's nothing I like more than just going there, going to the concession, buying something to eat, and sitting in the stands. I mean, I love watching that. And, you know, you show me a race where the numbers are on with duct tape, and I'm like, that's some fun racing.
He's the host of Racing Rocks Radio and the Cat House Hollywood podcast. You can go to cathousehollywood.com for more information. You can follow him on Twitter at Ricky Rackman. Ricky, buddy, been a blast. Let's get you on again soon.
Thanks, buddy. You know I love talking rock and roll and racing always.
All right, man. Appreciate it. It's Ricky Rackman. Go to cathousehollywood.com to get his podcast. Check out Racing Rocks Radio.